from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Many of us are familiar with what it means to like a post on Facebook. Well, four Albany high school students did that too on Instagram posts that were racist. The disturbing images included a photo of the school's African-American basketball coach with a noose drawn around his neck and side-by-side images of students of color and apes. The four students were suspended in March and are now suing the school district, claiming it violated their free speech rights. In this half-hour forum, we look at how strictly schools can regulate student speech. Joining me is Eugene Bollock. He is a professor of law at the UCLA School of Law. Good morning, Eugene Bollock.
Good morning. Great to be on.
Thanks for being here. And also joining us is Damon Esper. He's a freelance journalist who's been covering the story about Albany High School for the Bay Area News Group. Good morning, Damon Esper.
Thanks for having me on, Mina.
Thanks for being here. And if I could start with you, Damon, could you just tell us what happened? Give us the outline.
Yeah, so there's multiple things actually even beyond this, but just on the racist memes, apparently the account was created at least back in November, possibly earlier.
By whom?
By a student at Albany High. And the numbers can get a little confusing here. There's originally the school district said there were three main students involved in it, and they were on being investigated for possible expulsion. The investigation on one of those has stopped, so now there's two kids facing expulsion. And there were perhaps as many as a dozen other students who liked or commented on the images, and so they were suspended for 5 days as well. And the lawsuit that was filed last week was four of those students.
So I described a couple of the images. That's generally what they were like. And these images, or when did it come to the attention of the school?
So it was late March. Another student saw it and apparently did a screen grab, saw it on another student's phone and said, "What is this?" and reported it to the school. And I believe that was on March 20th. And from that point on, they did a investigation, and that's when the suspensions came down back then. Now, since then, they've told the students who are not up for expulsion that they can come back to school, but some of them have come back, and others feel unsafe coming back.
And this occurred, this commenting, this liking of posts, occurred on school grounds?
Well, that's not clear. I think it would be naive to say that kids don't have phones on school and aren't on Instagram on school grounds. So certainly it's possible. Maybe not. I don't know who can do the forensics on that to figure it out. But that's one of the issues that is listed in the lawsuit is it's suggested that none of it happened on school grounds.
The lawsuit was saying that the district doesn't have the authority then to address the situation with students in the way that they did because it was off-school activity, essentially.
Right, exactly.
Eugene Volokh, how much authority do schools have to regulate speech on campus versus off campus?
In California, not a lot. California has a special statute. I believe it's the only state in the country that has such a statute. That basically says schools don't get any extra authority in their capacity as schools to discipline students for their speech, generally speaking, whether on campus or off campus. Now, of course, speech in the classroom can certainly be restricted in order to keep students from, say, interrupting the teacher and such. But other than that, under the statute, schools aren't allowed to discipline students, at least unless the speech is punishable already under an existing First Amendment exception. So, for example, threats of violence could lead to discipline. It's possible that the news picture itself might be perceived as a threat of violence and could lead to criminal prosecution, certainly could lead to discipline as well. But when it comes to just somebody liking something or just racist images or whatever else, California law does not allow schools to discipline students for such speech.
What about under federal law? My understanding is that schools do have broad authority under federal law.
So remember, California schools have to comply both with state law and federal law. So the First Amendment itself does provide students limited protection, and it's generally limited by the requirement that, or by essentially schools being allowed to restrict speech that is disruptive. And there it's not clear What happens if there's speech off campus that causes disruption on campus? Let's say, for example, a student goes to a political rally off campus, and the rally might be seen as racist or anti-police or unpatriotic or anti-gay or anti-Muslim. Let's say the student even speaks out there. And then as a result, there is a disruption on campus. Could the student be expelled or suspended because his off-campus speech led to on-campus disruption? Under the First Amendment rules, that's not well settled. There's actually disagreement about that in lower courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court has never spoken to it. But again, California schools have to comply with both the First Amendment and California law, and here the more protective rule, which is going to be the one that really practically governs, is the California statutory rule.
Well, Damon Esper, what has been Albany Unified's response to this? And I should mention, we did ask Albany Unified to send a representative, but they declined. What did they tell you about the rationale behind the suspension of the students?
Well, they of course don't say a lot because we're talking about minors here, and they don't name anything, name anyone, or any of that kind of stuff. What they attempted to do, they've attempted to do a lot, and I think maybe more so than a lot of districts might have. They attempted to do a restorative justice session. However, that kind of went awry on them. They had a near riot breakout on campus when a protest and the restorative justice sessions kind of merged into each other, and that's part of the stuff that's in the lawsuit.
Right. So what is the lawsuit claiming around the restorative justice incident?
Well, teachers and possibly even a school board member were accused of being involved in some of this stuff, although school board member, I should point out, denied the accusation that was made at her at a meeting. Supposedly the students were marched through the hallways. They were called shamers. They were called obscene names as well. There was violence that broke out. The Albany police are investigating one student who apparently had his nose broken, who was one of the suspended students. Another student apparently suffered scrapes and bruises to the head. So it was not the best example of restorative justice, to say the least.
Yeah, it sounds like something.
Eugene Volokh.
Sounds like something out of the Cultural Revolution in China, right? With compelled self-humiliation sessions followed by physical violence, at least the allegation goes.
Well, we're talking about
so,
I'd like to invite our listeners to join this conversation and get their reactions to this federal lawsuit filed by four Albany High School students who were suspended for liking racist Instagram posts and also commenting on them. They say the school district violated their free speech rights. We're looking at the scope and limits of a school's authority to regulate student speech, and I want to get our listeners' reaction. How strictly do you think schools can regulate speech? What do you think about liking or commenting on a post and whether or not that qualifies as, you know, warranting suspensions and other actions by a school district if they aren't the people that originated the post itself. Call us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org, post your comments on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. Damon Esper, one of the things that you really captured was that this incident really had an emotional effect on the students and parents at Albany High School.
Yeah, we've had about five school board meetings since then, and this topic has dominated most of them. Certainly the victims' families, it's been very painful for them. A lot of emotional comments, and in fact, some of the students have actually come up and spoken at a couple of the school board meetings to kind of vent their pain.
And my understanding is that the student who originated, the student who put up the posts, that student's parent actually came out and apologized to victims' parents as
well? Yeah. There were a couple things. The father came to one of the school board meetings, and that was obviously a really emotional moment. And he apparently some of the parents of the victims and some of the parents of the accused have been getting together for their own kind of private meetings, I guess you would say, or what have you. I believe they're at St. Albans Church in Albany, but they've been talking. And when he spoke at the meeting, he spoke to relatives of the victims, and actually they exchanged a hug after he spoke. And it was pretty gripping stuff. I mean, he was very apologetic. He said he didn't raise his son that way, you know, and yeah.
And his son is one of the students who's being considered for expulsion.
Yeah, his son would be.
But not a party to the lawsuit.
His son is not a party to the lawsuit, but is still up for expulsion.
Well, Ben writes, this is a huge breach of privacy by the school. I might not agree with what these children are doing outside of school, but it is none of the school's business when they are not on school property. And Kurt writes, you cannot abridge freedom of speech. That's unconstitutional. Further, you really need to define racism. What is considered racist to some is not considered racist to others. And is racism a crime? Is nudism a crime? Sexism, chauvinism, fascism, any ism? I'm sorry, Damon Esper, you wanted to add something?
Well, I just wanted to say, if you spoke to the victims' families, they would say that this is not providing them with a safe environment for their education. And so I think that should be mentioned.
I think you also quoted a family member of a victim who essentially said that their child feels unsafe at school.
Yes, exactly.
But Eugene Volokh, go ahead, please.
I think we need to be clear. There are three possible classes of victims here. First, there are the people who were insulted online. And I should say, I think the insults were reprehensible. And I think that the parents of the kids doing the insulting, I think, are really ought to punish their kids in order to teach them not to behave this way in the future. Second class of victims is the people who allegedly were physically attacked. And you want to talk about feeling unsafe. The allegations are that said one of them, I think, was it broken nose, bloody nose. In any event, he was physically attacked. There's an allegation, I think, about a second person, as we were discussing, and others are afraid of being physically attacked too. Seems to me they are victims too. Now, it may be that they are victims in part because they said offensive things, but nobody should be physically attacked for saying offensive things. Third possible class of victims is the students who are being potentially subject to expulsion and suspension, because if I am right, that is illegal, that violates California law. They're victims of violation of their rights secured by California law, that schools should follow the law. And those who are being expelled in violation of it are also victims. So I think we need to recognize that victimization potentially in play here.
And Eugene Volokh, also, I'd like to ask you about what territory we're in when we're looking at being able to suspend students for liking something on a post or making a relatively ambiguous comment on a post if the post is racist. Can you just talk about some of the complications of that?
Yeah, sure. So like means various different things. Like could mean I agree with this. It could mean I think this is funny. It could mean I think this is daring and transgressive and I like daring transgressive things. It could mean I'm just standing with you, the speaker. I know you're going to get a lot of flack for this, but I want you to know that I support you. It could mean lots of different things, that's one reason, I think, why it would be especially hard to justify punishment simply for that kind of thing. Likewise with comments. A lot depends on the comments. Some comments could be sarcastic. Some comments could be ambiguous. And the allegation in the complaint was that some of the comments were, in fact, not favorable for which the person was being disciplined. Now, again, as a parent, I would tell my kids, don't express likes of this kind of thing, both because it might get you into trouble and because it's wrong, because, in fact, you shouldn't be expressing any support for this kind of stuff. But from a First Amendment perspective, people have the right to say things that are wrong. That includes both by saying words and by the rather ambiguous message being sent through likes.
Well, let me bring our callers into this discussion. Ellen in San Francisco. Hi, Ellen. Ellen, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
So I'd like us to all explore why we think it's free speech to threaten someone with murder. Why is that acceptable? It's not free speech to put other people at risk.
Right, Ellen. Thank you.
Their life at risk. I don't understand that it's free speech. I don't think that's what they intended
in the First Amendment.
Ellen, you touch on an interesting point, which is Eugene Volokh. Could the school district argue that the nooses, there were nooses in some of these images, that they were threatening and that that speech shouldn't be protected?
Right. As I mentioned, the noose itself might be punishable because it's a potentially a threat of violence. A lot depends on the context, but it may very well be. On the other hand, displaying a picture, an insulting picture of somebody without noose or something along those lines, is protected speech because it is not a threat of violence. It could be very offensive, could be insulting, could make people, the subjects, feel uneasy, but it is not a threat. Likewise, liking a photo which has a noose on it, I don't think that it is clear and unambiguous enough, as California's threat statute, by the way, makes clear that something's a punishable threat only if it's really quite specific and clear. So I think some of this may be punishable threats of violence, the actual posting of the noose picture itself, but not the likes. Here's an example. Imagine somebody shows up, puts up a picture of a police officer, maybe one who is accused of violating someone's civil rights, with a gun to his head, and puts up this picture. That might be a punishable threat of violence. But let's say somebody likes that picture. Seems to me that is protected speech. It's not speech that I would endorse, but it precisely because it could mean everything from, yeah, I think that this is kind of a hyperbolic sentiment, but one which at a general level I agree with, to, yeah, I think this is a cool, funny thing to say, or something along those lines. So I think just as we would, it seems to me, say that the First Amendment protects a like of this kind of message that may be seen as expressing violent sentiments towards a police officer in that situation, the same thing, I think, would apply here.
And Eugene Volokh is a professor of law at UCLA School of Law. Damon Esper is also with us. He's a freelance journalist who's been covering this story about the incident at Albany High School for the Bay Area News Group. Damon, Aline writes, one important fact is missing. The photos of the kids were taken in class and without students' permission. Please mention this. The lawsuit statement left this out. Is this true, Damon Esper?
I can't confirm that. I do know that several people have told me that.
And then Peter writes, the pictures in this case were on a private Instagram account, and their creators never had any intention that their pictures would be seen. How did the pictures become public? Is it true that, as the plaintiffs claim, this happened as a result of a student who wasn't in the Instagram group commandeering one of the cell phones?
So the claim is that, exactly right. In the lawsuit, they said that another student saw the photos, took the phone, and then did a screen grab. That's the allegation. All I can tell you for certain is that another student saw the photos and turned them in.
Well, let's hear from Joan in Albany. Hi, Joan.
Hi,
go ahead.
I know some of the parents that are involved, and I also have been working in the district and have been in schools with these kids. I've also worked in Contra Costa County, at Richmond High and El Cerrito High, and I also have worked with colleagues who work in Berkeley. This is a problem that is not particular to this school district. The problem with this school district is that they don't have the resources to deal with the problem. Kids are doing this a lot.
Doing they this posting, meaning, what is this?
Posting things that are reprehensible, just horrible for them to be doing. These things are happening at school. In California, there is not a law to keep children from harming themselves by taking pictures and doing things like this to their careers, their lives.
Joan, could I ask you what your reaction has been then to how the district and the school handled the situation?
The district is under-resourced. You just had a program about the lack of funds for these kinds of issues. This is a big problem. These people are overworked. They're underpaid. The schools are understaffed. In Contra Costa County, there's a health clinic in both of the high schools that I worked at, and a lot of things get caught in that health clinic. The county is represented there. Children can come in with their problems and have them solved. in a legal way before it gets to this big thing where it's blown up. Albany High School does not have that service. Berkeley High has it. Albany High School does not have a way for students to air their grievances about their peers in a way that is respectful of their civil rights. It's just not happening.
Well, Joan, I appreciate you bringing that into the discussion, and you're reminding me, Damon Esper, that there has been some fallout from this. The principal, as I understand it, has been reassigned?
Yeah, Principal Anderson was reassigned within the district.
Why?
Pardon?
Why?
They did not give a reason, but I think it doesn't take a lot to think that specifically the riot afterwards during the restorative justice was viewed as problematic, but I don't know. They haven't given me a reason why they reassigned him. But Ron Rosenbaum, who is a former principal and a former school board member, has taken over there. And that's the only professional casualty, as it were, to this point.
Well, a listener writes, this is about hate, not solely racism. The images included nooses were placed around the necks of the coach and student. Professor Volokh is not recognizing the difference between free speech and hate. Other legal scholars do. And Eugene Volokh, we have just 30 seconds or so before we do have to go to a fundraising break. But do you want to respond to this listener's point?
Sure. The First Amendment, as the Supreme Court has made clear, protects even hateful speech. It protects speech that expresses hatred towards based on race. Hatred towards Southern fundamentalist Christianity, hatred towards police officers, hatred towards America, hatred towards Jews, whites, blacks, everybody else. It protects all ideas, whether hateful or not.
It Eugene Volokh, he's professor of law at UCLA, and we're also talking with Damon Esper, freelance journalist for Bay Area News Group. You're listening to Forum, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. Forgive me, Eugene Volokh, I had to cut you off there, but finish your thought, please.
It's important to raise money for public radio.
Well, thank you for that point. Well, Billy writes, fighting fascism with fascism breeds more fascism. Matt writes, silencing or suppressing racist people is fascist and only going to entrench people in those beliefs. When do we start approaching intolerance with empathy and understanding? Let me try to get some more calls in. Nicole in San Francisco, go ahead.
Hi. Just listening to this great conversation that should be happening, it occurs to me that we focus so much on the litigious side of these things in our society these days that we get away from the crucial point, which is these kids that are lashing out at other kids and saying and doing hateful things. They're very sick themselves. They're in pain, and that is why they're lashing out. And I feel like if we approach it more from a societal community perspective and call it what it really is instead of attacking those kids, maybe we can get to the bottom of it and start resolving some of these problems.
Well, Nicole, I thank you for that point. You know, interestingly, Damon Esper, this had been bubbling up for a while, as you said. This incident is sort of the big incident, right, that has caused quite a reaction. But you were suggesting that there had been a lot leading up to it as well?
Yeah, leading up, other incidents, I would say. There was a group of freshman boys who apparently were exchanging Nazi salutes in the hallway that was reported. There was incidents of somebody, presumably a student, rearranging the keys on a keyboard to spell out some anti-Semitic speech. So there's no indication that the same kids who were involved in the racist memes were involved in any of those events. But those did happen. And another Instagram account was found, and where, according to Principal Rosenbaum, there was sexually explicit content, which of course has been a common thing. We've heard lots of stories of that where kids are posting pictures on Instagram.
Well, let's hear from Brandy in Albany. Hi, Brandy.
Hi there.
Hi. Go ahead.
So I just had a thought about just listening to the forum, and I do live in Albany. I think it's really important to create sort of an even playing field. No disrespect to the scholar from UCLA, but I think his background, if you look at it, has always been one that's been conservative when it comes to civil rights and what that means in this day and age and discussion of how we're dealing with a new era of civil rights. I think there are some scholars that one could look to, Derek Black, Shemerinsky, who is the dean of UC Irvine, and to just kind of have that balanced argument where on one side we have that conservative thought, but then on the other side we have scholars who do support limits and have done a number of arguments about the limitations of free speech and what that means in hate and creating safe spaces. So I'm just wondering why this particular scholar, I know that he has been quoted in some of the newspaper articles, but I think it's kind of been one-sided where other scholars would not necessarily agree with his opinion. So that's my thought.
Well, Brandy, I appreciate the feedback. Eugene Volokh, I guess taking this out of any realm of politics and what either side might feel in terms of, you know, who is right or wrong in this particular lawsuit, can you just talk about the significance of this lawsuit generally in terms of what it will be presenting federal courts with as an issue?
Well, again, there are two important questions here. One is what state law provides, and state law pretty clearly provides that students have the right to express themselves this way, even in very bad ways. And by the way, I disagree with Erwin Chemerinsky on very many things, but my guess is if you had him on this program, he would say exactly the same thing that I do. What I am describing here is basically pretty well-established First Amendment perspective and understanding of California law. There are a few scholars who do support exceptions for so-called hate speech, whatever that might be defined, although I think even they would say California law doesn't embed any such exception. But what I'm talking about is pretty mainstream on the left, right, and center.
But I guess what I'm saying is it sounds like this will be an opportunity to maybe settle or get closer to settling this question of how strictly schools can regulate speech.
Right, so it's possible that it might end up deciding, because there's also a First Amendment claim, to what extent schools have authority over off-campus speech. That's an interesting issue.
Yes.
My guess is this won't be the case to decide that, because if indeed the plaintiffs have a very strong state law claim, in principle, it could be litigated also on the First Amendment side. But practically, probably the school at some point is going to say, look, given that we're losing on the state law side, let's just settle the case.
Well, Eugene Volokh, thank you for joining us this morning and for those closing thoughts. And thanks, Damon Esper.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.